It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
News Podcast presents Bret Baier's All-Star Panel.
America's got to be in the lead if you want to deal with these threats. We're going to lead.
The morning is over. The Shiva is done. And if you're a conservative, you should be optimistic.
You know, my main priority right now is making sure that it delivers for the American people.
We have to make our country great again, and I will do that.
I think the president gets criticized by people all the time for the stuff he says, by people who ignore what he does.
Now, Fox's chief political anchor, Bret Baier.
After weeks of anticipation, Iowa voters braved the cold to cast their ballots last night. As many polls predicted, former President Donald Trump won big, receiving more than half of the state's vote at 51%.
Thank you. We love you all. What a turnout, what a crowd. And I really think this is time now for everybody, our country, to come together. We want to come together. Whether it's Republican or Democrat or liberal or conservative, it would be so nice if we could come together and straighten out the world and straighten out the problems and straighten out all of the death and destruction that we're witnessing. That's practically never been like this. It's just so important. And I want to make that a very big part of our message. We're going to come together.
The real competition, however, ended up being for second place as Florida Governor Ron DeSantis and former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley battled head-to-head for the runner-up spot, DeSantis ending up taking it home, but by a small margin, receiving 21.2% of the vote, while Haley followed closely behind with 19.1%. Vivek Ramaswamy, who came in fourth with 7.7%, took to the stage after disappointing showing to announce he was suspending his campaign and putting his support behind the former president. Now the remaining candidates set their sights on New Hampshire as they hope to win that state's first-in-the-nation primary next week. For a conversation on this and more, we bring in our panel, former Tennessee Congressman Harold Ford Jr., host of the Ben Domenech podcast, Ben Domenech. Boys, it's over. Iowa's in the books. Ben, what's your takeaway?
Well, I don't think all that much changed, though. I think things shook out in a way that perhaps surprised some people if you've been paying attention to vibes running up to this election. Over the past month or so, we've seen the narrative play out in the media and in some of the polling showing Nikki Haley's improving odds. And I think if she had matched or exceeded the number that we had in that final Des Moines Register poll, which saw her, 4 points ahead of Ron DeSantis, we could be having a serious conversation at this point about whether DeSantis should drop out or not. Instead, he overperformed his number in that poll slightly by about 5 points, edging out Haley in terms of coming in second and taking 8 delegates. And so there really isn't a rationale to say, DeSantis needs to be out. I also think that there's this latent thing that was happening at the end of that run where Donald Trump finally was critical of Vivek Ramaswamy, in part because, as it turned out, that 7 or 8 points that went to Ramaswamy probably would have ended up mostly in Trump's corner, giving him, a dominant 60-point performance as opposed to 51. And I think, that's something that, we should keep in mind going forward in terms of how it plays out and how many people come from that portion of the electorate to back the former president. But overall, I just don't think all that much changes after Iowa. I think that there's a rationale for both DeSantis and Haley to stay in this race, and pushing them out still, to me, looks like a proposition that won't probably happen before South Carolina next month.
Yeah, Vivek Ramaswamy in a joint event today in New Hampshire alongside the former president. DeSantis saying he is trudging on, a stop in South Carolina, then going to New Hampshire for a town hall. He says he's going to debate Harold, but Nikki Haley says, I'm not getting on the debate stage unless the former president or the president are on that debate stage.
Well, first, I thought she did a great job in all the coverage. I thought the network did a great job in the coverage of the caucuses. Two, I agree with Ben in a big way, and I think he may agree with me when he says, I want to make sure I understand, when he says that nothing has changed. I think he's saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, Ben, that the former president remains the dominant and controlling figure in the Republican Party. The president.
You are correct, sir.
And so that in that regard, I completely agree with you. And I would go a step further. I think last night on the network, Kellyanne Conway made a plea for, I think, Nikki Haley to drop out of the race. I don't know if she did the same for DeSantis as well, but I think at some point, if I put my Republican hat on, and I'm not a Republican, but if I put my hat on, you got to think he's going to be the nominee, the former president. I think the magnanimous tone he struck last night in his victory speech was something I hadn't seen from him, nor was I expecting, I might add, from him last night after such a resounding victory. And I think, Ben, you and Brett both raised the right point in terms of Vivek Ramaswamy. Had he not been in the race, that 7 or 8 points would likely have gone to President Trump, giving him an even larger lead. It might have even made it where he would have won in every county in the state. I think he only lost one county in a narrow margin to Nikki Haley. So if you're Republican, you want to get this race joined as quickly as you can against the Joe Biden versus Donald Trump, especially if it looks as if it's going to be Trump. And especially if Trump is in the frame of mind he was last night. There's some things that President Trump's going to have to shore up if he's going to beat Joe Biden. I know the favorable ratings for Joe Biden are low. I know he's losing in places that he wants to be up. I saw Georgia poll showing him 8 points down. But this race will get closer for a variety of reasons we can all speculate about, including some of the key issues that have animated the midterms last year, and even the I guess you call them super midterms with Kentucky and Ohio in Mississippi and others over the last several weeks. So I would agree with Ben, nothing much has changed. But if I were Republican, I would want Haley and DeSantis to quickly realize that they're not going to be able to beat Trump. I think you let him go through New Hampshire. And if Nikki Haley can't win big votes in her home state, which I believe would be the next primary, I think it probably spells the end of her campaign.
All right, we're going to take a quick pause here. We'll be back after this.
I'm Charles Payne. Listen to my Unstoppable Prosperity podcast so I can get you making money right now. Whether stocks are hitting new all-time highs or in free-fall mode, opportunities abound. So why are so many potential investors still sitting on the sidelines? In a new season of my podcast, I'm going to get you in the game. After 38 years on Wall Street, I'm ready to impart some lessons and get you invested in the greatest wealth-generating machine in history. Listen anytime, everywhere at foxbusinesspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.
I don't think anybody's, you know, doesn't look at the landscape and say the former president is in pole position. There are, however, been a lot of Republicans that, and maybe it's in the DeSantis camp as well, that want a just-in-case break glass kind of candidate because, one, something happens legally with the former president and the dynamic change, another shoe drops, something happens. You know, there's a lot of kind of wondering they're going to box themselves in New Hampshire if everybody drops out.
You know, I think there definitely is that concern. And Brett, you know, I actually spent the last 72 hours or so talking to a number of different members of Congress who were expressing kind of surprise, I guess, that things haven't extended a bit further in terms of this primary process, expecting perhaps that it would stretch well into March and have some more competitive vibes to it. They expressed some surprise that things seem to be resolving fairly quickly. And I think a big part of that is that exact concern, is that concern that these legal cases, as they play out, are going to continue to weigh down the attention of the former president, the resources that he has to bring to bear. And there are a lot of them particularly concerned about what will happen in the now, you know, narrowly held Republican House. They're perhaps a little bit more ambitious and optimistic about what they see on the Senate, simply because of the map playing in their favor and the quality of candidates compared to perhaps the experience that they had in 22. But there's a lot of concern related to that about, you know, what happens if we get into a competitive general election and we see these legal challenges take away votes from independents who are so critical to winning back the White House for Republicans. And I think that that's something that is shared, frankly, by a lot of intelligent voters across the country. But they also, I think, are resigned to the fact that, you know, this is where the majority, the vast majority of their party is. And no one really was able to find a strategy this time around to take on the president, despite massive success that Ron DeSantis had going into this election, and the kind of momentum that you saw early that was behind him, I think, in a very real degree. The lawfare efforts of the Democratic Party and Democratic officials across the country to go after the former president had the effect of boosting him enormously, and we cannot underestimate that.
I agree with you, and I think, you know, there's all kinds of speculation. Was that all meant to happen? Do they really want to run against him? Of course they want to run against him more than anybody else. But it did seem like some of this was designed to get him out, you know, take him off the ballots, don't have him be a factor. If you look, Harold, months and months ago, and Ron DeSantis was coming off this massive win in the midterm, had tons of money, and the establishment Republicans and donors were circling the wagons for him. If you looked at last night's results and that months ago, I mean, you couldn't have guessed it.
Yeah, there's an incongruence with a lot of this. I think that I think one of the things that Ron DeSantis, his person and his campaign and the combination of that reflect is something that is so present in politics on both sides of the aisle in a lot of ways, but it's manifesting itself more so on the Republican side because you have a group of presidential candidates. And he, and you know, 3 months ago, six months ago, he was believed to be the second coming in politics. We always have one of these in a primary, and Republicans have had a few more than the Democrats over the last go around.
Scott Walker, Tim Pawlenty. I could go down the list.
And there's no doubt about it. And they're nice guys, but it just, they were not, the moment, whatever happened, just kind of overwhelmed them. You know, he tells you more what he's against than what he's for. And he's done a lot of things, DeSantis in Florida, but he seems to have a more of a chip on his shoulder. For some reason, voters, it just didn't resonate with voters. Look, I think was one of the points, Brett, that you and Ben were making, or Ben was making, and you were commenting on it, was, you know, this effort, Democrats want Donald Trump as the nominee. The polling data suggests that Democrats should want Donald Trump as a nominee and not want Nikki Haley. But I do think the efforts over the last year or so on the part of some, and even most recently in some of the big battleground states, to disallow President Trump or disqualify him from running, certainly would fly in the face of this idea that you definitely want him. I think there are a group of people in the country, and I don't necessarily agree with them. I'm not for President Trump, but I don't think the way you do it and take him off the ballot if he hadn't been convicted of anything. But there are a group of people who genuinely believe that he should not be allowed to be president or should not be allowed to run. He was disqualified because of the behavior on January 6th. That remains to be seen. The court will weigh in on that issue, and obviously a jury may get to weigh in on that issue as well. But the data certainly shows that President Biden has a better chance against Trump. He knows Trump. He's run against Trump, and he's defeated Trump once before. But I've warned my party. Donald Trump reminds me in many ways of one of my favorite characters in a movie, a guy named Jason Bourne. You just can't contain this guy, and you don't know where he's going to be, what he's going to do. What you do know is he's capable of many things. And last night, him speaking magnanimously in a conciliatory tone about Governor DeSantis and Haley, even Governor Burgum, who was in the room with him, you know, the old adage in politics, you know, that's what happens in politics. Certainly some people say that negatively, some people say that positively. However you say it, I think it was apt last night. That's what happens in politics. And Donald Trump is showing an ability, or at least a proclivity, to want to be, to bring a proclivity to help bring his party together around him. And if the legal issues, you know, percolate and surprise, I mean, I think some of these guys have suspended their campaign so they could reenter if the opportunity, or for that matter, the circumstances compel them to.
Yeah. Last thing, Ben, you know, there's a circle of the, a corner of the conservative voter base and punditry that really has a problem with Nikki Haley. If she does pull out a win in New Hampshire, there will be another corner of the Republican Party that says in order for Donald Trump to win independent suburban women, he should put her on the ticket. I'm talking a concerted effort to go after that possibility in Trump world. What are the chances that that happens? I know it's not, ordained that he's the nominee as of yet, but it looks that way.
Well, I certainly think that there's going to be a strong push by a lot of rational people within the political commentariat and sphere, who are going to say, if you want to win back these independent suburban women voters, then you absolutely need to add her to the ticket. Because, those are the voters who she's going to compete for. I personally think that underestimates the kind of animosity that a lot of those voters still retain for the former president. And that, even with Nikki Haley on the ticket, I don't think that disabuses them of that notion. At the same time, I think that there is a real recognition of a problem there for the former president, and one that I think he needs to address when it comes to naming a vice president. Regardless of who that is, it needs to be someone who I think can reassure a lot of people, who have doubts and who are in that independent sphere. One thing, though, I would just note about Nikki Haley, she's kind of a cipher in a lot of these ways. The people who hate her the most and who ascribe a lot of different ideas to her, I'm not sure they've really ever made the case, from my perspective, that she actually is all the things that they claim that she is. And while she may read as being perhaps, softer or a bit of a throwback to, say, the era of 2012, I'm not sure that you can really make that case, just given the kind of attitude that she's had and the role that she had at the UN when she was there. And frankly, I think, was a pretty loyal soldier for a lot of the things that the Republican Party claims to stand for. So it's an interesting situation where people read her as kind of being along the spectrum of a throwback to Bush era Republicanism that they heavily dislike. But I'm not actually sure that's who she is. I think she's a little bit more of a blank slate, and that can be both advantageous and a disadvantage when it comes to national politics, as you know.
That's right. Now we're off to New Hampshire at the end of the week. Gentlemen, thank you very much. Now for a bit of history. 1968, after the Democratic Party nominated Hubert Humphrey, despite him not winning a single primary, Americans felt a change was needed in the election process to ensure voters, not just party leaders, had a fair say in who may go on to lead the country. Though many states held primaries from 1912 to 1968, they were largely non-binding, having little to no impact on where the state's delegates would be awarded. The dissatisfaction with this system led to the creation of the McGovern-Fraser Commission that established more transparent guidelines to the delegate selection process and laid the foundation for the nomination process we now see today. This move put power back in the hands of the people and is why we now see voters in states like Iowa and New Hampshire take their roles during caucuses and primaries very seriously, as their votes often can and do shape the election ahead, or at least trim the field. That'll do it for this week. You can hear more of this series at foxnewspodcast.com, wherever you download podcasts. Make sure to leave a rating and a review. We want to hear from you. For Harold and Ben, I'm Brett Baer. We'll see you next time.
Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts, and Amazon Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
This is Jimmy Failla, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a 3-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.